Blog Talk Radio. going. Hi there, welcome to Science of Light Show. This is Randy Goldberg, and welcome to everybody's show tonight. And we have a special show. We're going to be exploring the world of New Orleans and creativity and change. The theme is I'm all about change, and change is an important thing in anybody's life. If you see a movie script, you'll see how the important parts of any story is how a character develops, how they change. And that's where, if the universal intelligence is watching this drama unfolding here, whoever that mysterious creator is, they want things to change, and they've programmed a lot of change. And that, in fact, is the only constant in life, that everything's changing. And so much of our difficulties that we have is in adjust to different states of where we got used to things being one way, and it can be very upsetting when different change happens in our life and we're not ready for it. And facing that adjustment, in yoga philosophy they talk about clash and cohesion. So when one experiences the change, often in the psychic sphere, one will have what's called a clash. One will experience clash in their mind. And after one makes the adjustment, accepts the new state of order of things, things settle down, and that's referred to as cohesion. So there's always this wave-like motion that's going on that is a process of clash and cohesion. And it's nice to reflect on how your own attitude towards change is. If you were to draw what change looked like for you, do you invite change into your life? Do you like change? I know there was a time when I drew a mandala, kind of doing a creative reflection on how I was feeling about change. I think it was at the time of going through a breakup, and the the image that I drew for change was a thunderbolt with like little droplets of blood. The whole idea of change, of losing what I so was so dear to me, was very painful and difficult. And at that time, I was just hating change, and change was so painful and hard to deal with and upsetting. And take a moment and just try to think what your own personal image would be. How would you draw your own attitude towards change? What does change look like to you? Is it a friend? Is it an enemy? Is it something that helps you in your life? Something that is hard for you to deal with? And tonight we're going to have a special guest. Gary Rosenblatt is going to be joining us. And he is a resident of New Orleans and an artist, musician, amazing creative soul writer, producer, and he is someone who's gone through many stages of his life and lived a lot of different changes and lived in many different places, and each of those phases of his life reflected different changes that he's gone through. I think there's something, you know, just about being an artist and being a creative soul, that change is one has a closer connection. You know, there's the saying about creativity that chaos and creativity are very much connected, and so without some chaos in one's life, if there's too much order, then things can perhaps be dangerous. You can steer off the road, and if there's too much order, and then there's no creativity in there. If there's total chaos, there's no form. So, you know, there's always this dance going on between form and structure. And we're going to, Gary is just called in, so I'm going to Mike, yeah, man. Hi there, Gary. How are you doing tonight?
I am quite well.
Great. And great. Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here. And I've just been talking about change and gave a little bit of intro. But you're an amazing creative artist, musician, and had so many different lifetimes, and you know, you've lived in so many different places doing different things. Your life is quite a story, and I'd love for you to be able to share with our audience on the Light Show. So go ahead, and I'm going to start at the beginning and just you know, tell us a bit about who you are and your life's journey, and let's just see how things unfold.
Well, I wanted to respond to what you just said. As you're talking about different things and all the different things I've done, I think they're all one and the same. I keep on referring to the stream. There's a stream that I see in our lives that is constant, and all you have to do is just reach into the stream and receive, take what you need from the stream, and so it's all part of the continuum. And so we're never without. Have to be able to see this constant that's available to everyone. So,
yeah, absolutely. I've always said only constant life is change, and it certainly is a constant. And I couldn't agree more.
So you want to know how my life? No, it's just
yeah. So where are you from? Let's start at the beginning and just share your life's journey and different places that you've arrived at different times. And like you say, it's actually all the same life and all the same you, and just things are always changing. That's the nature of the game.
Well, I began in Atlanta, and I moved when I was very young to New Jersey and spent a short time there, and then to Baltimore, and grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and moved to New York, then to L.A.
So let's stop a little bit. So how old were you when you moved to New York? New York is an amazing place.
New York, I was 19, but New Jersey was pretty amazing. I was five, I think, around five. And I remember the cherry blossom trees. We had, I think one in the side yard, a very big old house. And we would play in the tree and shake the leaves and just say it was snowing. You know, we had a very simple existence, digging in the backyard and finding a a gold ring with a ruby. I remember that. We also burned a car on fire, my brother and I. So,
oh, really?
But we were negative.
Me and my brother were also big pyros. So.
But yeah, we just liked playing. We didn't plan it to happen. It wasn't intentional.
There were all kinds of wild.
It wasn't an intentional community back then. There was a big house with a large garden that my grandmother would foster, and then through the back garden you continue and ended up in a parking lot that actually was the back parking lot of the fire station. So it was very convenient for them to be able to pull into their back parking lot and put out this fire in an abandoned car. So it wasn't someone's car. It was
right. So when you moved to New York when you were 19, was that for school? Or?
I moved to New York for school and to get away from the tethers of family.
Mm-hmm.
So I extricated myself from where I grew up and moved to the big city. And I was all of 19. So.
Yeah. So what I remember you saying you were lived in quite a little bit of a cloistered, isolated existence with your family. So how was that? Was that scary to go there to the city?
Yeah. It was.
How was your adjustment?
Well, it was Orthodox. You know, Jewish, Judaic. I was raised in a very strict family. And schooling, and ended up going to university in Baltimore before I left. And I graduated this yeshiva early because I really couldn't take being there any longer. So I was able to, again, extricate myself from that and then immerse myself in 3 years of a state university that was mostly, I think, Catholic. And there were women there, so that was a new experience because we were in an all-boys school growing up. And so I went from there and to New York, which was a bit overwhelming, but I was still an Orthodox Jew, and went to live in Brooklyn amongst other Orthodox Jews, and that didn't work for me, and I gave up Judaism 2 years later. And that was that was like a black pit because I had nothing I felt in my life because Judaism seemed to, or it did, encompass most of my existence in terms of what I ate.
How you defined yourself.
On so many levels. So then taking that out of my my life, it was just a bit jolting, you know. And I didn't know where to turn, and so that was the period of, another step in the direction of finding myself. So.
Mm-hmm. And then being in New York, which is itself a bit harsh and, you know, so huge and overwhelming at times. And
it was an amazing time to be in New York with people like Keith Haring, drawing, painting in the subways, and the art scene was blowing up at that period. Basquiat.
Were you part of the art scene? Or?
I did performance art in a club called the Pyramid Club in the East Village, and I'd go out dancing and clubbing most nights because it was what we did. You know, back then it was going to the clubs. It was disco, which I started back in Baltimore, and then moved into New Wave, and I was dressing in tight, bright-colored jeans, had my hair punked and straight up, and did that for a movie I was in, which was really... a lot of people know it, but it's not a very good
movie. Were you... studying art then in school, or
I studied film, and specifically animation was what my concentration was, and did some work on a film called Bottom Stream, which was on PBS then, and I studied acting after I graduated with a film degree from NYU, and I studied for 2 years acting and studied pantomime for about a year, year and a half, and I had a clown business called Clown Doctors. I had a remedy for all occasions with the line. And,
wow. Yeah. You weren't Dr. Feelgood.
I was not.
Wow, so you did kids' parties? Or?
We did a kids' party in East New York, which back then was more dangerous, I think, for a white guy walking through a neighborhood, and I was dressed in makeup and a full bright color costume. And my roommate at the time was my partner in the business, and we both, the clowns walking through the project in East New York was interesting. And I don't know that the family had much money, and they still hired us out of the Village Voice and served the kids hot dogs, and we did, I guess, tricks, and we did some funny stuff, and they were entertained. So,
So you were in New York in that exciting time, and
Studio 54,
finding yourself.
Yeah, Studio 54 was still happening. We worked as clowns at Studio 54 during their New Year celebrations for 2 years. And we hung in these baskets, and we moved ourselves across the dance floor while people were abusing themselves royally. I just threw gifts down to the folks down below. And
so, at what stage did it become a little bit less scary? You kind of entered the abyss, you said, when you sort of let go of that dogmatic framework that had been holding you together.
It was less scary when I started to join the other misfits that I feel. I felt came to New York for that reason too, to find themselves. So we were a family of sorts.
Yeah, well, we're all finding in the process of finding yourself and exploring, and yeah.
And it was a time of AIDS too, so I joined ACT UP the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, and got myself arrested with them when Bush Sr. was speaking at the Waldorf Astoria, and that felt good. You know, I felt like I had a place to vent my anger at many things, and here it was a perfect target. And I watched a lot of people that were fighting for their lives at the time, and it was scary, and it was also enlivening to be around these people that whether they were or weren't afraid, they were willing to, you know, take a stand for their lives. So they shut down Grand Central Station. They did a protest on Wall Street. They, you know, there was so much activity then, and it changed people's lives. It, you know, there was research that started to happen because of these people that were motivated for change. And I was scared at this protest, watching these people climb up on top of the big announcement signs at Grand Central, or shutting down Park Avenue during a protest of Bush, and throwing fake bloody money out the windows of the hotel Waldorf Astoria. So it was just, it was exciting, you know. And
done quite a bit of activism myself. You finished school and then moved to L.A.? Was that
right? I was auditioning for parts, and I was acting, and I thought there would be more opportunity in L.A., and I went out to L.A., and it didn't seem to be so. So I started to write, and I figured it would be more proactive for me to write scripts. So I wrote a script while I was out in L.A. I hired a producer, and I didn't ever, you know, I never showed it to anyone because I didn't feel it was of the right caliber. So,
how long were you in L.A.?
7 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how was that phase? And, you know, the East Coast, the first time you go into the West Coast, grew up on the East Coast.
To me, it was, I called it the devil's playground. It felt like no one really had a heart, but there was a lot of activity. There were so many people that were involved in their own business, their vanity, and I don't know if it's changed much, you know, since I just visited recently, but there are pockets of connection, and I joined covens out there. It turned out there'd be a lot of Jews that had joined the covens too, also seeking another religion, you know. And I worked at the Ojai Foundation for a short period as a work in their work study program up in Ojai, and so there were some really beautiful moments there, but it was a bit challenging living there. So,
did you like the West Coast in terms of like this kind of big West Coast vibe and East Coast vibe, or is just LA is its own monster of plasticity and different things?
It's a combination of both. I mean, there was an L.A. vibe the first time, I went to Burning Man. It was in 93, about a year after I moved to, I got to L.A. in 92. And I was 33, and California Men's Gathering up there and doing sweat lodges. I'd never done a sweat lodge in my life. And so it opened me up to exploring more.
Yeah, there's a lot of open-mindedness out there compared to the East Coast.
Yeah, I had a better time visiting up in Oregon and in Northern California. Harbin Hot Springs up in Northern California I visited back then, and I spent about a month of the time at the hot springs, and people come there from all over the world. And so,
when you're a massage therapist, when did you study that?
That was probably about 95, 96, around there, 94, 95.
What, when you were in L.A. time? Or?
It's a school called IPSBI, Institute of Psychostructural Balancing. And I've been doing massage since I was a kid, so it wasn't anything new, but it was a way to spend some time and get certified. And I had a practice in Venice when I lived in Venice, California, and it was interesting, but... I stopped doing that because I felt like all I was doing was giving and not receiving. So I think that's a problem with some therapists out there that give too much and don't receive.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the helping professions that tend to martyr themselves and find it easier to give than receive and all that kind of thing. That's part of why there's so much burnout and different things.
So I just did massage a few weeks ago. I did 16 massages in 5 days, which was more than I ever did back in the old days.
Yeah.
But, it takes a commitment and takes a real mindset to be able to do so much work and give that much, and receive at the same time. So
then by the time you got sick of L.A., you got burnout, you got, I don't know how would you describe it, but then you made a change, and where did you go from there?
I moved to Bellingham, Washington. I had visited there before and found it to be a very peaceful place and a bit hippie, and I fit into that mold, I suppose, or people wanted to peg me as a hippie, but I found a certain comfort there, and it was I spent 2.5 years there living on an island most of the time called Lummi Island. And I wrote music and sat out on the porch and looked out over the Bellingham Bay, and there were whales that would swim by the ocean that I never actually got a chance to see because they swam across the other side of the island. And the ferry boats would go up to Alaska from there, and we had the reservation right across the way. And,
what reservation?
Reservation.
Yeah. So what tribe?
Lummi tribe.
Lummi.
Yeah, I had owned that island as well, and probably
sold. Is that near Olympia or near Seattle?
The south tip of Vancouver Island, by the San Juan Islands.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Very beautiful, but I needed some excitement, so I didn't stay too long, and I moved from there to Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I stayed for 5 years, living in a mobile home park, which was my first and last.
So how was it living in the Southwest?
Beautiful out there. No matter where I've been, there's always been family. I've really relished being able to find luxury wherever I land. It's so much more enriching at times than biological family. So the family, it's interesting because the family ends up knowing the other family that you visited in another city, and so as many people are on this planet, I always found it quite comforting to know that we move in small circles. That is a truth that I witnessed and still witness in my life.
Yeah, the whole 60 days of separation. Anything more you can say about the Southwest? Is, I mean, there's a certain kind of energy there. It's very different than... So you were in the Northwest, and then, you know, it's amazing because you lived in all these, kind of like every part of this country.
Oh, exactly.
I know, yeah, but
in the Midwest.
You lived, you know, in the East and in the West, you know, South.
Well, I feel like it's to me, I'm following the sign of infinity. I started in Atlanta and went up to New Jersey and then up to Baltimore, New York, and then back down to L.A. and then up the coast and then to Santa Fe and then to New Orleans. So I'm just...
Santa Fe.
Yeah, and I'm on the road right now, and I've not been back to Atlanta in since I was 3.5.
Mm.
And completing the...
Going back to Atlanta, back to where you started from. So, you know, you talked about, you know, not... liking L.A. so much. How do you like Santa Fe?
Well, it's hard. I think it would have been different. I know it would have been different if I hadn't lived in a mobile home park. So that was a little...
So you were a struggling artist at the time, and, you know, it's kind of became quite a bourgeois city, and
I had money. I had some money. I could have afforded to live in a nicer place than a mobile home park. But I was cheap, or I was living in fear. That's a better interpretation, living in fear.
You were doing your art there? You were writing?
I was doing some writing there, but mostly just hanging out until I realized that I wanted to move to New Orleans, and I decided to put together a band. And that almost fell through when certain people felt they needed more rehearsal time, and they were professionals, and they didn't want to operate and by the seat of their pants, which is how I was. And we put together a ramshackle kind of approach to putting together a band, and it came off pretty well. So we had some success out there.
Cool. What was the name of the band?
King Rose and the Sweet Treats. And I thought of the Sweet Treats because of, you know, I wanted to have all the guys wearing suits and wearing little ribbons on their sleeves as though they're the gifts to honor. But someone thought it was too gay. That's what he said. And so he changed it to the name that part of his old band name just to make him happy. I said, fine, that's okay. I was still the king. I was still King Rose. And so the next incarnation in New Orleans, as I'm planning, is King Rose and the Daredevil Booty Shakers. Booty shaking is quite popular in New Orleans with the bounce movement there, the bounce music, and yeah.
So then, when you've been in New Orleans, let's say, so tell us about the energy there and what's it like living there.
Well, I came in shortly after Katrina, and it was pretty dark. The city was no lights, long strips of roads, major roads, and no stop signs. People put rudimentary signs up. But, it was like it's been described as similar to Cuba in many ways. A lot of very brightly colored houses, old cars that are falling apart. The streets are all, you know, destroyed. And there's been a real upswing in terms of the infrastructure there. In the last few years, and IT companies are moving in, think tanks, they have an entrepreneurial upsurge, there's the property values have increased, gentrification is in full swing, and it's pissing off some people, and some people are I guess enjoying the change, but it seems like it's another step towards destroying culture in another city of the United States. So it still has character, it still has a certain flavor that can't be had elsewhere in the United States, which is why I live there. So, there's sometimes it really doesn't feel like you're living in the United States.
So when you moved there, did it relate to the fact that Katrina had happened, or you would have moved there if Katrina hadn't happened?
I had been planning to move there anyway, and I was out at Burning Man when the hurricane hit, and found out from many different voices out there what had happened, but I didn't trust them because it was Burning Man, and I figured it was just a story that a rumor mill had created. And then there were 15 calls on my phone when I got into range out of the desert or out of Black Rock City out there, and discovered that it was true, that indeed a hurricane had hit. The city was underwater, and I spent a year and 4 months longer in Santa Fe waiting for things to correct themselves somewhat.
Mm-hmm. So if this Katrina hadn't happened, you would have moved there like a year earlier.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, wow.
So, but there are still groups that are coming to help rehabilitate out there. And there's the problem. There were so many problems in New Orleans beforehand, and there still are now. And there was so much blight in that city, in my city, before Katrina hit. So there's you know, trouble runs deep.
And, yeah.
There's a church called St. Anna's Church, and on the front of the church is a sign, and every year they list all the murders, and the age, the name, and how the person was murdered. And that list is long. And it's unfortunate, and I really feel that something needs to be done in terms of the children who are, you know, perpetrating these crimes. Not just the children, but children are being shown or given examples that are so negative. They don't have much to look forward to, so they, you know, they group together, and violence is one thing that that occurs. But they there's so much dealing of drugs. You just drive through certain neighborhoods, and the kids are on the corner, and you know, it's just. It's really a shame that there are not more programs in place to help rehabilitate the children and give them something to look forward to. And that's something that I've been considering about, trying to figure out how I can help in some way.
I have to tell you, later on, give you some information. I have a friend here in D.C. who runs this thing called the Guitars Not Guns, and it's a cool organization. There's so many different historical things that influence and are part of the soup, the gumbo, whatever is there in New Orleans. So, you know, there's of course, you know, influence of French culture and African and slave culture and Caribbean and, you know, a long time kind of, you know, the arts and also different kind of mystical traditions and so many different things. There's a certain energy there in New Orleans. It's definitely a special place. And,
well, we have our own language and our own way of dressing. We don't. I went down to LA on this trip that I'm on. I visited LA, and these people were dressed to the nines just to walk their dogs along the beach. And we don't act that way. We dress in costumes, and we can be wearing wigs or, you know, dresses or, you know, big glittery accessories any day of the week, and it's acceptable. You know, it's not that way in other cities. We try to find any reason to party, we will, you know, and which is great, because I feel like we're living in a time of a real darkness in certain ways, with this obsession with media and with the internet, even though it's what we're using as a vehicle tonight, but you know, people are seems like they're hiding with all these devices and smartphones and whatnot. And I feel like the smartphones are dumbing people down in certain ways and acting as blinders. And so if we can turn off some of the noise, just get into our hearts and into our bodies, you know, and that's what we get a chance to do that in New Orleans. We get a chance to party. And we party hard, you know, and that's why people come to New Orleans, because they feel a certain freedom to do so. And they're afforded that, you know, whether it's Mardi Gras or another time of year. And people have said to me on many occasions, like, I came to visit and it wasn't Mardi Gras, but I still had an amazing time. I came to visit, it was New Year's, and it wasn't as big as Mardi Gras, but it was amazing. You know, and then they retell their story, you know. And so it's amazing. Whenever I travel, you mention New Orleans, oh, I love that town. Oh, that's great. And, you know, so it's an invitation for people to connect by mentioning that you're from New Orleans. And also, there's a certain expectation, you know, in how others see you, you know, if you're from New Orleans, especially musically. And
so have you been there long enough to not be considered an outsider?
I feel that, yeah. I stopped the people that walk by my house, and I live about 15 blocks from the quarter in an area called the Bywater in the Ninth Ward, and there are people that walk by who...
Is that in the Ninth Ward?
Yeah, and I could tell that they're... And this was pre-Katrina. It was dangerous, more dangerous than it is now, but there were times, I don't know if it was back in the 70s, but the neighbor told me that he would walk out and he'd see people just lying there. He'd go to the store and there would be nobody on the street, and then he'd come back and somebody would be laying there on the street. And you weren't always sure if somebody was dead or not. But if you go up and check to see if they were dead, they might pull a gun out of their pocket, because they did that on purpose to draw you in. Say, drop your money, walk away. That was a ploy to get you to rob you while they were just lying there on the ground. So that was a new story. I heard that a few months ago. So, but it's the whole area is pretty much cleaned up. But I would stop these people that wouldn't say hello and challenge them. Say, you know, good morning. How you doing? We say hello. This is, you know, ask them how long they've been there. And they, oh, I'm from New York. I'm from L.A. We're just not used to it. Said, well, get used to it, because this is what we do. You know, we're friendly here. You know, and you know, you can let down your guard some. So I do my part, and maybe it's sometimes welcome and sometimes not. All right.
And part of the reason I wanted you on the show tonight was just to talk about your going through this really cool summer travel trip, and it seems like you're in a stage in your life where you're opening up to change and being in the moment, and just want to share where you're at these days.
Well, I was in a, and I don't like the expression man cave, but it kind of fit me. You know, I had my own little cloistered area in my little tiny cheap apartment, and not very pretty. Sometimes there'd be mice running around, you know, one of the old houses with holes in the walls and whatnot. But affordable, you know, because it was so, you know, it was in the condition that it was in, and it allowed me to. I had a bicycle shop right next to my house, and I got really tired of people wanting something from me all the time, you know, because I have a catering business as well, and I make chocolate down in New Orleans, and I wear the name, the New Orleans Chocolate Devil. So I got tired of just doing for other people, always doing and making money and not being interested in not feeling my heart. So I said, I'm going to go on the road for 2 months. I closed my bike shop and sold off most of the bikes that I had and closed up the house and took off for places known and unknown. So it's been a trip so far. But my mantra has been about being still and letting go and not being attached to result and to break patterns, the patterns that I see that I'm not pleased with. so that I can, in a sense, be reborn and start anew. So that's where I'm at.
So what's that mean? Christians talk about being reborn and start anew. So what's that mean to you?
Well, I don't want to be disabled by fear. And I think fear was keeping me in New Orleans and not venturing forward on ideas that I had and desires that I had. So I've always found that traveling on the road allows me the freedom, especially because I don't know a lot of the people that I meet, to take on certain situations that I wouldn't normally back home. In New Orleans, 300 to 400,000 people, everybody seems to know who you are and what you do, and it's like you're living with family. It is. So stepping away from that situation is a good thing. So that's what I did. But it's hard to break patterns when you yourself are living in this body and cannot see some of them. So it's good to be able to have people. What I describe as give you mirrors in your life so that you can make changes based on how they show you to yourself, you know, as it were.
And a lot of people sometimes talk about, you know, all of reality, all of what shows up in your life in a way, the mirror, that that most of what we see is projection, you know, the meaning that we create and give it, and so in a way we're always sort of being mirrored back to some extent, and, you know, in terms of, I mean, it sort of gets into how our intention and our way of looking at the world kind of creates it to some extent. And if you take the challenges that one has in one's life, you know, if they're there for a reason and if there's some meaning to that, then in a way that's a mirror reflecting on what we need to look at. Does that seem to make sense?
My brain is very tired right now.
Yeah, actually, I want to invite, I don't know if there's anyone who has any questions or comments. If there's any listeners, feel free to press 1 to get into the call queue, and or you can type a question or comment in the chat room also. And again, the call-in number is 760-542-4345. And yeah, what's next on this journey of yours?
I'm headed to do some teaching down in Ocracoke Island in North Carolina. With a stop in Virginia Beach. I haven't been back to Ocracoke in 30 years, and I plan to teach theater arts and some improvisation work with the kids, and mask work and storytelling, I believe I love storytelling. I'm really fond of creating something from nothing. That's always kind of how I looked at it, with pantomime, not using words, just motion, you know, to create a story. And as I always felt the same way about animation, which is what I studied at NYU. I'm real fond of the work from the 1930s. And without words, you know, like the early films, you know, the black and white, you know, silent film. So to see people do work and movement with masks and to tell stories without words is, to me, pretty incredible. So
sounds very powerful. Do you have any advice about creativity? I mean, you've lived such a creative life. And, how does creativity work? Is there any advice you can say about how you've stayed creative in your life?
I think you need to listen to your own voice and have that direct you as to which way you need to go or want to go and or feel the need to go. Because there's so many different forms of creativity, you know, on the planet. So, from writing software to dance, just a variety of forms of expression. So, I just encourage people to just follow their own voice, and silence is good. I think it's one of the most I don't formally meditate, no. But if I take a walk and just let all the voices disappear and try to just stay in the moment and not live in the past or in the future, then I have ideas just come to me readily. So that's my practice. You know, so it works for me.
Yeah.
So I really love stories, reading the history of various artists who have created and what they've created based on dream, different experiences that they had in their lives with their partners, their family, and it just that said stories and paintings. And so it's interesting to see the sources for inspiration from a lot of great artists. And so I think all... You know, the work is there. It's, to me, the most beautiful work is that which comes from the personal, you know. So, personal experience and how that feeds your...
So is that the same as finding your voice and giving it voice, giving it
light, you know, allowing that forward, you know.
Mm.
And you can't create if your life is just too busy. Some people feed on that, but that they have to find a place that allows them, they have to allow for that expression. They need to allow that expression out.
Mm.
If you don't, and if you keep on shoring up the holes, then ain't nothing going to happen.
Yeah, wow. So
I'm headed to Georgia. I'm going to Asheville. I've never been to Asheville, and I've heard incredible things about
that. Yeah, a lot of artists and healers in Asheville.
And then I'm headed to Atlanta, and I haven't, like I said, haven't been back in 51 years. So I'm going because I don't remember much of the childhood I had. So and on this trip, I've stopped in L.A., I've stopped in other places and names and parties and all kinds of experiences have come back to me. So I want to see if I can stimulate that part of my life so that I can, or the memory of that part of my life so that I can recall some of the, which I've forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm headed that direction.
So we're going to be wrapping up. Any last advice about how to stay in the moment and stay open and embrace change?
Well, I think it's important, and this is what you and I were talking about earlier, is that not to fear a lack of that which we need in our lives. And that harks back to money. So many people are afraid. They won't have enough money to live in their older age. They won't have enough money to live in current, you know, time.
It harks back to love and so many different things. We feel a deficit of, you know, of a lot of things, you know, money, love, you know, all kinds of different things.
And so if you trust is a really big one, and are okay with letting go again, you know, of fear. That it will come to you. It's just like, to me, it's the laws of the universe. And so that's what I've been practicing is trust. And there have been some really amazing experiences I've had on this trip when I've been in that place. And I've wavered. You know, I've wavered when I've spent time with family that stirs up old, you know, old wounds. And but when I feel I've gone off track, then I have to recalibrate and come back to balance. And so to me, the real ultimate is to stay in a balanced place in one's life and not to be thrown, because the power of being is there. So more of intentional practice of letting go and being at peace no matter what is happening around you.
Yeah, wow, beautiful. Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Or inside you. I'm saying, you know, what's happening outside, inside, it's all part of the same. Again,
yeah.
Continue.
That's just back to the mirroring. So you're mirroring what's inside is getting mirrored outside.
And the continuum of life.
Yeah.
Hippie trippy stuff,
hey,
man.
good luck on your travels. Thanks for all the creative joy you put in this world. And I'll just go out.
If you want to see my image, you can look at the website.
Yeah, so go ahead. What website?
It's www.nochocolatedevil.com, New Orleans Chocolate Devil. And there I am holding chocolate with fire of life behind me.
Wow. And we did have somebody just call in. So, hi there. Did you have a question or comment? It looks like not. Actually, just logged out. So, okay. New Orleans Chocolate, N-O for New Orleans, nochocolatedevil.com. Excellent. And you did the artwork on that.
I had a guy named Frenchie who's moved to Texas from New Orleans. He was in New Orleans at the time, and he did the artwork.
Do you have your music posted anywhere? Or?
No, I'm still writing, still working on things, but that's going to be my focus is again,
right,
clearing the deadwood.
Yeah, anyway, this is a great artist, and you will be hearing more of Gary Rosenblatt. You heard it first.
King Rose,
yeah, okay. And want to thank people for tuning in and just play some outgoing music. And see you all back next week. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Flooding to me in a dream. Is it love? Is it love? Filling all my life with meaning. I thought that you were far away from me, but tonight I feel no distance. I see you standing in the clear sky as I touch you to reach on high. You let my heart stay still. A sweetness in the near distance. Words I thought to utter now lie still. And in my mind, just thoughts of you. Is it love? Is it love? Is it love? Flowing through me in dreams. Wind takes my heart by storm. I find the stillness at the center and pass through worlds I never dreamed of. I see you come and let the darkness shine. I love to call you in the morning. A light that's forming in the clear sky. Touch touches my heart like a soft hand and takes my mind to reach on high. I love more than you can imagine. Will not hear the voice of reason. The joy is echoing around me, and all you've done I thought was mild. Is this love? Is this love? Is this love floating to me in dreams? Is this love? Is this love flowing through me in dreams? Is this love? Is this love? Babanam Kevala, Babanam.